You're listening to the Heart of Giving podcast with Art Taylor, powered by bbbgive.org. Here we explore the motivations that form the basis of giving and service. We inspire generosity and celebrate the transformative effects that giving and service have on the human spirit and on community. The conversations featured on the podcast also uncover giving strategies that educate and provide tools to help listeners make impactful gifts of both their time and money. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Welcome to the Heart of Giving podcast, powered by bbbgive.org. Give.org is the nation's standards-based charity evaluator and your one-stop source for information on giving and reports on the most asked about charities. I'm Art Taylor, your host, and today we're going to talk about the tragic subject of human trafficking. But there are organizations out there working to help people who've been victimized. And with me today to talk about this is Hannah Allen of the E3 Alliance. Welcome, Hannah, to the Heart of Giving podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Hannah, tell us about the E3 Alliance, Employers Ending Exploitation.
Yeah, E3 Alliance was started in effort to invite the private sector in determining what their role is in combating human trafficking. So the Alliance itself is a collaborative of businesses, government, and nonprofits all working together to eradicate sex trafficking in San Diego. And we try to leverage that interest from the business sector into ways to support the ongoing movement that San Diego already has going.
Now, we talk about trafficking, and I think it conjures different images in people's minds. But give us a sense of what you mean and what people should be thinking about when they hear that term.
Yeah, that's such a nice question. Thank you for giving me space to kind of spell it out. I think when people hear the term human trafficking, what they might envision is the movie Taken. Or when we talk about sex trafficking, you might envision Pretty Woman. And that's not a great descriptor of what we're talking about. So with E3 Alliance specifically, we're addressing sex trafficking or commercial sexual exploitation. So that's any time a person is sold for any kind of sexual pleasure to anyone else. And then typically that money is paid to a third person, a trafficker or a pimp. But also included in sex trafficking is the commercial sexual exploitation of children. And that doesn't necessarily have to have any kind of exchange of money. And in fact, the child doesn't necessarily even have to be touched for them to be sexually exploited. So that also includes things like child pornography.
Wow. And it remains astonishing to me, and I'm sure most people, that this kind of activity takes place. And so it's great that we have an organization like yours out there trying to deal with it. And when we say deal with it, what are some of the measures that you take organizationally to try to address some of these issues?
E3 Alliance has a three-phase approach. Right now, we're focusing on phase one and two, the first being prevention education. So our goal is to educate the San Diego workforce about what is human trafficking, what does it look like, the indicators, how to report something if you see something, and how to engage further in the movement. So we do the prevention education to businesses first. We do employee trainings, and then we invite either individual advocates or businesses, people who've gotten energized after learning what's going on and that it's actually a very large problem in our community. We help plug them into the nonprofit organizations that are already doing the work to then further support their mission. And they can do that by way of volunteering, offering professional services, in-kind donations, event support. There's so many ways that the nonprofits who are working with victims of trafficking could use support from the business sector. And so we try to make that as vast of an opportunity as possible.
So your approach really has been to engage employers in helping you achieve your mission. And I guess you've done that because employers tend to be, in many cases, public facing. They encounter people quite often who are either buying products or exploring options of purchasing. And so they see them. People might come into a convenience store, et cetera. So is that what you're trying to help people who are employees appreciate what they might be seeing and that there's something they can do about it?
Yeah. So by training the workforce, we're essentially training the eyes of the public to recognize red flag indicators of like, you know, this woman looks like maybe she has bruising that's in various stages of healing over time. Maybe it looks like she needs medical assistance and maybe doesn't have access to it. Or it could be the dead of the winter and, you know, they're walking downtown in clothes that are clearly not meant for winter. You know, these are some of the red flag indicators we ask people to keep an eye out for in order to kind of put those indicators together and say, does this paint a picture of something that I've been taught about? And now I have the skill set to go on ahead and effectively report what I'm seeing. So yes, we want to train the eyes of the public, but we also reach some really important audiences by training the workforce in that we're talking to parents whose kids might be at risk. There's no socioeconomic group that is immune to trafficking. Any child can be groomed and pulled into trafficking via social media, online games. So we want to talk to parents and say like, hey, your kids might be at risk. We also are going to have the opportunity to talk to people who have purchased sex or may regularly purchase sex and to say to them, you might not understand how detrimental this activity is and that it's not just a service in exchange for money. But it's actually very, very harmful. And we know that we can reach people with influence. So there's constantly legislation around human trafficking, both at a national level and a state level. And we want to ensure that if our survivors of trafficking are telling us there's legislation that's important to them and they have a hard stance on it, we want to be able to connect them with people of influence who can help elevate their voices.
Yeah. Wow. You mentioned that people can be groomed, especially young people, via the internet and different social networks. How does that happen? And what's going on that we need to pay attention to?
Our kids need validation. They need to be heard, not just heard, but listened to. And I think that oftentimes parents get so busy with all the other demands in their life that maybe we don't constantly have time to sit down and check in with our kids. But if a child isn't receiving love and validation at home, they will certainly look for love and validation in other places. And that can sometimes be someone who's looking to exploit them. So that happens really quickly on social media. Someone will, you know, a trafficker, someone who's looking to exploit a child can connect with them, compliment them on some photographs, start direct messaging them, listen to their problems, reassure them, become their support person. And then very quickly a bond is made and a child has this new level of trust with someone who's outside their family who has malintentions. And then with COVID-19, we saw such leaps and bounds with education by moving to hybrid learning settings or just at home learning settings. But that's actually a really dangerous space for kids. So it's great that we've been able to figure out how to do home in the middle of a pandemic and continue education. But also we're teaching kids as young as 4 and 5 how to sit in front of a computer with a live web camera where they're taking direction from someone on the other end of that camera. And that is a really vulnerable space for a child to be comfortable in that because they could be in an incredibly safe environment learning with their teachers and with their friends, but they also might find themselves online taking instruction from someone who is looking to hurt them rather than help them. So the district attorney in San Diego has reported that since the pandemic, reports of internet crimes against children have tripled.
Oh my goodness.
So kids are constantly being groomed. And then we did a survey a few years ago of 20 area high schools in San Diego, all over the county, different areas of wealth and poverty, and all 20 high schools reported that they have instances of recruitment and grooming happening on campus. And we're seeing an uptick also in kids recruiting kids. High school aged girls recruiting middle school aged girls, saying like, hey, you don't have to keep going to school. Like, you can have nice things. We have nice shoes. We get these nice bags. Like, come with us. Let us teach you what we do. So then it becomes almost like victims recruiting more victims. So it's very nuanced. It's multifaceted. And trafficking is like a really sophisticated network that exists utilizing existing business infrastructure. So all of the same ways that we communicate online and all the same ways that kids spend their time online, traffickers are following those exact same trends.
So take me through an instance. So let's assume that a young person is being groomed online. And I guess the next suggestion would be that they meet somewhere in person or offline, or what happens?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So if a child makes a connection and establishes trust with someone they meet online who they've never met in person, one of the early kind of red flags that we ask like middle school and high schoolers to look out for and parents to look out for is like, does this child suddenly have a disinterest in school? Do they suddenly have a disinterest in their extracurricular activities? Are they distancing themselves from them, from their friends? And then like big red flag, do they suddenly have lavish gifts? Like, did all of a sudden they get a designer handbag? So within the San Diego community, we work with several other nonprofits that do prevention education starting in elementary school. So there are programs that we provide to the county that's appropriate for elementary school age children, middle school age children, and high school age children, trying to ensure that like if we're educating parents, we also are educating the youth so they can also protect themselves. Because honestly, an unsafe person can usually look very similar to a safe person.
Yeah. Hannah, what's some data out there regarding the incidence of this? And are we able to actually salvage situations that have gone in the wrong direction?
I'll tell you this, it's really challenging to get current good statistics on human trafficking because it is so underground. I mean, it's happening all around us and it's happening in public, but there's so many details we don't know. So there's one study we rely on here in San Diego that is San Diego specific, but it's estimating that the annual sex trafficking in San Diego generates $810 million per year in our city, which is a massive number. And the estimation of victims, current victims, is over 3,000. And I like to point out even more that we're not paying enough attention to runaway statistics. So we have teens who are chronic runaways. They just, every time they're put in a new foster situation or a new group housing situation or back at home with their families, they are chronically running away. And those are the ones who I feel like you said, are that how do we like recover them before they're really kind of too far gone? And I think to answer that, I would say that we really need to be looking more closely at what they are running away from. We know what they're running away to, which is someone who's saying, I can take this person and exploit them over and over and over again. And that's part of the appeal of trafficking humans over trafficking guns or trafficking drugs. You know, if a trafficker is found with humans driving in their car, that's not illegal. That's totally acceptable and fine. And if you are selling guns or you're selling drugs, you can only sell your product one time versus with a human, that person can be repurposed over and over and over again and resold over and over. So quick intervention is really challenging. It's really hard to keep up with the number of youth who are being enticed or groomed or recruited into trafficking, and it's really hard to keep up with statistics. But I will tell you that California reports upwards of 60,000 missing children reports each year, and that can be the same child running away over and over and over again. But if we have 60,000 at any, you know, time during our year, there are children who are kind of falling through the cracks, and we have 60,000 reports of missing children, I would say we probably need to start right there with like our attorney general's office going, how do we get more data on why are these kids running away? What are they running away from? How do we put a safety net around them? But I would say the best intervention is prevention. It's parents like staying on top of what their kids are doing online, monitoring the comments they're getting, having access to any kind of like DM, any kind of messaging system that's private or one-on-one. It's better to try to prevent than to intervene when a child is bonded and already being pulled in the wrong direction.
You know, I do have to ask this one last question. What does a parent do when they see these red flags?
If they're seeing these red flags in their children, I would say it's probably time to call in a little bit more support. So I would encourage the parents to kind of reach out to whatever support system they have, if it's therapist or church group, so to have support around them. And then I would encourage the parents to try to open up that, try to reopen that connection with their child, that honesty. And that's never achievable by force. So It has to be done almost in like a trauma-informed way, where your child is bonded to someone and you have to say, we want to be the people who are closest to you, but it can't be done by force.
Speaking of law enforcement, how effective, in your estimation, is law enforcement on identifying traffickers and helping to restore young people to lifestyles that don't involve that type of exploitation?
We are really fortunate to have a human trafficking task force in San Diego. We have officers from different police agencies, state and federal agencies as well, working collectively, where their full-time efforts are looking for children who've gone missing and trying to recover those children, as well as trying to identify people who are hoping to hurt children and intervening there. And they are incredibly successful, which is also incredibly disheartening that there's so much help we need from law enforcement. But I think probably any agency would tell you that for the size of the problem, we have putting a lot of weight on the backs of 30 officers whose job it is to find these kids. I would say over the last 10 years, we've seen a really remarkable transition with how we talk to people who are victimized by exploitation. So we've retired the term child prostitute, because a child can't be a prostitute. And we've retired the word prostitute unless it's used in a very specific setting. But these are people who are victims, and we used to look at them as criminals. So I see a lot of hope in the way that we are reframing the way that we're looking at people who've experienced exploitation. And also, instead of treating them as criminals, when there's someone who's identified as a victim of trafficking, our task force is notified of that. And that person is not only treated as a victim, but they're brought into a safe place where they have to tell their story one time, where we're not asking them to re-traumatize themselves over and over again. We put them in law enforcement puts them in a nice, safer setting. They have kind of access to resources. Law enforcement even distributes out like backpacks with like clothes and hygiene products. So even if they meet a victim who does not want assistance in leaving the lifestyle she's in, they still say, here's a gift from us to you. We are on your side. There's a huge distrust with law enforcement and typically victims who have been trafficked for years. There's a major disconnect there. So it's also a way that law enforcement is trying to kind of bridge that gap and reestablish a connection. So I see a lot of hope in the way that we are shifting the way we address victims of trafficking.
How organized are there networks of exploiters, so to say, or is this sort of a one-off kind of industry, illegal industry, or is it more are there networks of this going on? How do you explain the probably rising numbers of young people and not so young people who fall victim to this? Is this organized?
Yeah, thanks for pointing out. It's not just something that happens to children. It's something that happens to men and women as well, along with non-binary people. There's like kind of no one who's totally immune to being victimized by trafficking. And the answer to your question is both. So if a child is being trafficked by their parent or by an aunt or uncle, you know, that's typically a one-off situation. But if it's a trafficking ring, those can be incredibly sophisticated. They can go across borders, you know, from like Mexico to California. They can go across states. And typically when those rings kind of establish themselves and become more sophisticated, a very fast way to take someone who has just come into the process of being exploited is to introduce them to drugs and then relocate them. So get them away from their friends and family where they don't even know where they're going. And so, yes, we do see an exchange of victims where they are being moved around to different traffickers who all belong to the same network. Yeah, it's incredibly sophisticated.
Wow. So I guess part of the challenge is to figure out how to break up these rings, but I'm sure that's not easy because just like all criminal activity that's organized, it takes quite a bit to prove and then to prosecute and then to get to the right people. You know, all the things that we know that are the challenges facing law enforcement. So this is heartbreaking. I just can't imagine what it must feel like to be, let's say, a parent, for one thing, and you look up and your kid is gone and you don't know where they are. They're probably not in the same state anymore, maybe not even in the same country. And you really have very little hope of ever finding them again. I just can't imagine what that must be like. And also the terror that the victim experiences being caught up in that type of exploitation. It's got to be terrorizing. Have you had the chance to speak with people who've been victimized and recovered, and also to parents who've had to go through that?
Yeah, absolutely. We work really closely with survivor leaders or lived experience experts to learn from their stories. I would say another kind of area of growth over the past few years is that we are no longer asking victims to share their stories live in a setting in front of people they don't know.
Sure.
Because we're realizing how re-traumatizing that can be. But their stories are actually what guide us in the work to try to identify ways we can prevent and intervene. I can't imagine as a parent what it would feel like to know that your child is romantically bonding with someone who you see red flags around. And I can't imagine what it would be like to try to talk your child out of that bond that they've already created, which is why like the best advice we can give to parents is like, you really have to like sit down and look your kid in the eye and listen to them and establish trust. And that trust has to be two-sided, it has to be, you know, honesty on both ends, because it can happen really quickly. We do have the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. And when a child does go missing, the best way to find that child is for the family to get really aggressive and to go on the news and to create the Facebook page and to like be heard as much as possible. For me, I tend to think about the kids who no one is looking for. You know, a child who's been through the foster care system has maybe even experienced exploitation by people they were told they could trust or who would be taking care of them. We have a lot of kids who kind of drop off the radar and no one's looking. No one is looking for them. And that's, I think, where my heart breaks is, do they have anywhere to go? If they've run away from something to something else, what are we returning them to if we do locate them?
Well, and, you know, the whole definition of kids, especially those coming out of foster care, you know, you hit a certain age and magically you're on your own with, you know, a bag of whatever it is they send you out into the world with. And, you know, it's no wonder that with so little support, many of them end up in these situations. And as you say, these are going to be the kids that no one's looking for, or adults at this point that no one's looking for. It's just tragic. You know, it feels to me, and I could be wrong, that these are the types of crimes that people don't want to talk a whole lot about. That we want to sort of act like, you know, this is not my problem, so why should I be concerned about it? And, you know, it's kind of ugly. We don't want to really face it as a society. But we do, right? I think we do need to really consider these types of crimes if they're ever going to stop. Do you have a sense of how we can really begin to get the word out and create sort of a clarion call to all Americans to be more mindful of this?
I wish I knew. I wish I knew the recipe to make a, you know, a large appeal to the entire nation. I think, unfortunately, people have a vision in mind. This is something that happens in Cambodia and not in, you know, and not in America. But the truth is it happens here every single day. I don't know how to activate the entire country, but I do know that by going through the workforce, we're not only talking to parents and to sex buyers, we might also be talking to people who've been victimized themselves and had no idea there was a name for this or that there are people who cared about it. I think even our victims don't know their victims. Mm. That's why oftentimes it is hard to, like, for the police to meet a woman on the street and convince her that night to go into a recovery program. You know, it's a huge decision to make. But I do think this is a problem that all of us need to care about, because if we don't think of this collectively and we're not working collaboratively, we're not going to be able to tackle the issue. And that's why with E3 Alliance, what is so important to me is that we be able to plug in anyone who wants to become involved. We find a way to match either their interests or their skill set to fill a need that already exists here in San Diego. And I'll just, like, share with you momentarily, that's exactly how I entered the anti-trafficking movement. I'm privileged to work in this space because I've not ever experienced exploitation myself. And I think that the survivor voice is really, really vital in the conversation, because I don't know how to eradicate it. I haven't experienced it. But when I came to San Diego, I said, I've come from working for a huge international corporate business that didn't have any kind of protocols in place for, like, if staff members witnessed something that said, like, I know that's not right. I know there's something wrong here. And to not have any way to respond to it, for me, felt kind of tragic. So when I kind of entered the scene, I said, I care a lot about this. I've never experienced it myself. But what I do know is businesses have a role to play and they need to be doing their part. And so that interest and that skill set is exactly what drove me towards working for E3 Alliance. It's like, yes, we should talk to businesses. We do need to be activating businesses. They do have a role to play. And then for anyone who says, like, I'd like to get involved, but, like, I can't be a mentor, or I don't have any dollars to give. Like, we need accountants. Nonprofits need marketing support. They need web design support. They need someone to come clean the gutters out of the recovery home. Like, any way someone wants to plug in, will find a way to put their skill set to work. And I think that's kind of the importance of the Alliance, is that we want to be strengthening the fabric of these nonprofits who've been carrying the weight of this movement on their backs for years.
That's terrific. And I hope that anyone listening who has an interest in supporting the work that you do will do so, either financially or find other ways to connect, because obviously, we are going to need to all collaborate if we're going to change this in our country. Hannah, I guess I'm really wondering if, from the standpoint of organizations like yours around the country, are you talking to each other, and are there ways, you know, you're in San Diego, are you talking to people in Cleveland and Houston and Philadelphia and other places? Is there sort of an alliance among organizations like yours out there around the country, so that you can also learn and share best practices and maybe identify young people who are from different places? Maybe is there any kind of links that you all have?
So E3 Alliance itself is countywide. We have businesses from all over the county, from every different industry, kind of learning what they can do. But no, we don't have a very large national presence or connection with other cities and other states. But I agree with you, it would be a nice way to share best practices. And I think that I see a need for what you've described. And yeah, maybe someday we could see the alliance spreading that large.
Well, some of your employers, it seems to me, would extend beyond state borders. And for instance, my wife was formerly a flight attendant for many years, and her company would train all flight attendants in how to identify people who might be trafficked and what to do if they had a person who sort of fit, I guess, a certain profile. And, you know, this is a global airline, so, you know, they're going to definitely find people from everywhere who may have this problem. So maybe through your employers is a way, right? I don't know.
Yeah, a lot of the businesses we have interest in working with have presence outside of San Diego. And in California now, we have a whole list of industries that are required to every year train their employees about human trafficking. So we try to supplement that education. You know, rather than their manager trying to quickly learn about what it is, we offer to come in and provide those services. But the travel industry is one that is incredibly important. And yes, we've had a few kind of industry leaders. I can imagine what airline your wife probably worked for.
Yeah.
And I think those are the people who set the bar for the other organization, or the other businesses in their industries to follow. I think that setting that gold standard is incredibly important.
Well, I'll just go ahead and give them a shout out. It's Delta.
It's Delta. Of course it's Delta.
So hopefully the others will do as well. Well, listen, Hannah, I am just really appreciative that you'd come on the podcast and give us some insights into this. I guess as we wind down, what are some of the things that we can all do as individuals and maybe in our own organizations to elevate your mission and to try to bring down these rings and individual actors who are preying on the people of our country?
I think it can be overwhelming to learn about the subject and then immediately become an advocate for it, because it's a lot of information. It's a lot of heavy, sad information. And I think that when we imagine being an advocate, you know, it's kind of like on the street with a clipboard, but really a really practical way people can help is not by becoming the advocate and having to carry that load themselves. It's by finding audiences. If you can gather people, employees, if you can gather your church group, if you can get, keep that circle small, a bunch of moms of 13-year-olds, whatever audience that you have access to, there is a nonprofit near you who will come and talk about this heavy subject. You don't have to become the expert. Just any way to gather people, that's like a very quick way to become involved. And I also would say, as a parent, it's incredibly important. It's incredibly important that you monitor your kids' activity online and that you install some kind of monitoring parenting app to ensure that you're always in the know of what your kid's doing. Because yes, they do deserve privacy and distance, but the internet is the whole entire world, and you don't have to give your 13-year-old access to the whole entire world. You can still, you know, keep that circle small.
I have another question about adults. Is it true that people are being sort of extracted violently? And if it's not true, if I'm just dreaming this, or if it's just something strange, I just thought I'd better ask it. But is it true that people are being extracted violently from public places and then find themselves in these situations?
That is incredibly rare.
Okay. I just want to make sure.
Yeah, pulled away from their parent in like an IKEA parking lot is incredibly rare, just because there are, for lack of a better term, low-hanging fruit of people who could go missing without any notice. So safer for someone to try to extract.
Got it. All right. Well, Hannah, I want to thank you for doing this. And my goodness, I wish you all success in helping us in this country deal with this.
Thanks, Art. I really appreciate the time and the opportunity and what you do.
Thank you for listening, and I hope you'll listen to other episodes by just going to any of the major podcast platforms. You can also follow us and subscribe on Patreon if you want to make a donation, patreon.com. And also make a comment on, especially on Apple Podcasts. We would love to get a favorable review on Apple Podcasts because that helps us to build audience. Thank you very much.
You've just listened to the Heart of Giving podcast with Art Taylor. Be sure to tune in next time for a brand new episode. To listen to our other interviews, visit heartgiving.podbean.com. That's heartgiving.podbean.com. Subscribe to our show on major podcast platforms. The thoughts and opinions expressed on this podcast are the views and opinions of the guests, not those of the BBB Wise Giving Alliance or program affiliates. This podcast is for information and educational purposes only and is copyrighted with all rights reserved. This podcast is protected by Podbean's Terms of Service.